It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were guides, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies be line with a death wish. Be right, didn't help. No name on a guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
Some ways, as Sean pointed out, you could say Jason Alexander was very heroic last night. He ate those innings for the bullpen. He saved them. And now they'll be ready to go if they're needed today. You know, we weren't really going to do a lot of playing the song. Maybe the sounder here or there to just acknowledge what our hero was up to. But considering the results, we have to go to something else. And honestly, as I still reminisce over my weekend watching The Dark Knight and Batman Begins and The Dark Knight Rises, this is appropriate.
You either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Jason Alexander lived long enough to see himself become the villain. After an 11-3 record the team had in his starts, unfortunately that has now dropped to 11-4. It's 11-4 with the bullet.
11-4.
It's still very good. Like, you're better off having him start than not, clearly.
Yeah. I was thinking maybe this year, maybe he is Two-Face, where there's a good start and then there's a bad start.
At this moment, he is very Harvey Dent like.
Yeah.
Which is the voice you heard in that clip. Just
flip a coin. That's what he's going to do.
But Harvey revealed, of course, that the coin was always heads.
Well,
it was a two side on the coin. It was heads on both sides.
Manipulated Rachel.
Well,
that's all right.
Well, Harvey was a villain from the jump. Actually, all that square jaw savior,
smooth talking
savior of the city stuff. It was always a flip of a coin, except it wasn't, because it was always heads. And then when it came down to it, he started shooting cops, dirty cops, but he did start shooting cops. We're not advocating that.
They
were dirty cops.
Gotham had a huge problem at the
time.
And
it's just the movie in the Batman universe. But either way, Jason Alexander was bad. Wasn't helped by Christian Walker, who was preparing. He got his body in a spot where he could turn a double play, except, you know, the first thing about turning a double play, you actually have to field the baseball. He didn't field the baseball, went down the line, opened up a giant inning. It would have been some damage. He makes a play, two runs given up by Alexander, didn't have his control, but you get out of the inning and you keep it moving. And as we saw throughout the game, the Astros bat certainly woke up. But that 8-run first inning kind of killed the game off. And unfortunately, the Astros winning streak is over. At 4, Yordan hit a couple home runs, so that's good. That no real ill effects from the injury that had him take himself out of a game when he swung in the on-deck circle. So he seems okay. Pena is back in at home run. So there are some good things to discuss, but it's kind of always clouded when your starting pitcher gives up what Jason Alexander gave up, and it changes the game entirely. You go from, hey, you know what? This team playing pretty good baseball. You get a real reminder of, hey, it's only as good as the next pitcher, and unfortunately our hero suffered at the hands of the hated Rangers. They're not good enough to be like a Joker level villain. They're really not. They're more like the gang of mobsters who the Joker infiltrated and then eventually just pushed them to the side. They're those guys.
The Chechen?
Yeah.
Those guys?
I think the Rangers are the Chechen. I think they're that. They got over on our hero once. Well, he'll get an opportunity again. It just will be an unfortunate start in this hero's journey. Yeah. Don't worry about it. He'll turn it around. Bane broke Batman's back.
Mm-hmm.
And Batman flipped the switch. Sure, he had to go into a hellish prison.
Yeah. Yeah. But
and is that Sugarland?
No.
Is it Corpus? Do we have to send him to Corpus? And then he'll be back and ready to go? I don't know. But Jason Alexander will be fine, at least for the purposes of this bit where I stick with some journeyman who becomes the star of the team, at least in my eyes.
11-4 Alexander's.
Look, if you're a numbers guy, you can't really push back against me. He's 11-4 in starts. When they put him in the spot he should be in as a starter, the Astros win a vast majority of their games. Think of it this way. Would you want a pitcher that's 11-4 over the course of two seasons? Yes, you would as a starter. That's what time he's on. Back our hero when he's back trying to redeem himself in his next start. That's all. Start.
I like that this show has very few, you know, Astros hills that it's
I'm dying on. John was taken aback by this too. He thought it was a bit, which in some ways it is.
It's
half a bit. But I do like the fact that forget about his name being exactly the same as the guy who played George Costanza. Forget about that. That's what other people are latching on.
That's the low hanging fruit.
Yeah, but I got levels to this. The fact that at this point he could be considered my favorite Astro. I think I'm very other than the people in his family. I think I'm alone on this. Anyone else have Jason Alexander as their favorite Astro?
You got to be top 10 Jason Alexander support.
Yeah, I don't know how big his family is, but you know, like all families, some of his cousins probably don't like him.
I was going to say, once you get to the cousins,
there's
like,
some cousins who don't.
That guy's just like a Rangers fan or whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Maybe there's a cousin or two who doesn't like him. I think I'm top 10. I don't need to really rank it. I just know.
I just have a hard time.
You can't find a stronger supporter that has no familial attachment than me. Go ahead, try. You can't.
No. I was going to look up where Jason Alexander is from, and I just looked up Jason Alexander.
Yeah, you're going to have to go Astros. He's from Windsor, California.
Okay. So then north, south?
I don't know, actually. It is near San Francisco. Not that near, but close enough for people who know where San Francisco is to know it's Northern California.
Giants fans?
Possibly. It's unlikely that they were Astro fans until he joined the team. So I think I'm right up there.
Yeah. No, you're definitely up there. Yeah. I think I'm lower. I may be others receiving votes.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm pushing hard for
the ride.
I'm trying to make the 2014 playoff, all right? I'm Brett Bielema pushing for that.
Well, we will talk about the discord in the SEC where the coaches are now pissed that they signed up for a 9-game SEC schedule and the playoff has not expanded as of yet. They were promised at least a 16-team playoff when they agreed to 9 games. They don't got that, so now they're upset. You know, while I position Greg Sankey as a hero because he's standing in the breach of keeping this from becoming a 2014 playoff, he ain't got control of his league like past SEC commissioners did. This wouldn't have happened under previous regimes.
No, Mike Sly
would have never let this occur. Never. Greg Sankey, got to pull the reins on these guys. They're just talking, and it's not even just like old Lane Kiffin talking about teams outside the conference. Like he had something this, like either yesterday or the day before, where hey, if I hadn't left and Pete Golding was the DC and up in the booth, we would have beat Miami. Well, shoulda, coulda, woulda. So that's typical SEC stuff where you talk about the other conference and what you would have done if you had a different scenario play out. Going against each other, brother against brother, is not what they do. At least not as public as they've been. Like, they will snitch on each other.
Ole Miss famously was part of brother against brother.
That's true. That's true.
They love brother against brother.
But they have tried to position themselves as we're all one. Sure, they went behind the Aggies' back and said, Texas, come on in. But that's under Sankey.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different regime. Things like this happen. It used to not be the case.
Yeah. I feel like Lane Kiffin and Steve Sarkisian, like, every week, just, like, say something that winds people up.
Yeah, I got to take it back. Greg Sankey, No, yeah, it was under Greg Sankey, yeah. The Texas thing. Yeah. I'll take it back. I shouldn't take that back. But, yeah, it's Sarkisian, it's Kiffin. They've spoken. The other guys have mostly talked about the conference themselves and what's going on. But those two have reached out and said anyone can get some.
Yeah, they're just like, bleep that guy.
Yeah, like, wait a minute. Come on. Talk. Hey, this is a – we're not even at media days yet.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Your academics stink. How about that? I mean, there was like a 3-day span where it's Lane Kiffin. Ole Miss is racist. Exceptionally racist compared to LSU. And Steve Sarkisian is like, and their school stinks.
Yeah. Ole Miss is like, hey.
What?
We had the best season we've ever had. Can you give us a little bit of time before you come after us? They're looking like an ascending power, and people are coming after them in different ways. Either way. It is what it is. We'll talk about that more as the SEC has some infighting. The Texans made a move. I wouldn't say it's a move that's unexpected, but I'm surprised at the mechanics of it all. I just assume it'd be a straight extension for Nico Collins instead. It's, hey, you're going to get more money this year, and we'll give more money to you next year. So we'll talk about that. If you want to join us, the number is 713-780-3776. And we've got our second check mark in the negative for Victor Wembanyama. It's been all positivity. People had already forgotten that he threw one of the more dirty elbows in recent NBA playoff history. Because, hey, he might have been on the verge of taking out the Thunder. The Thunder take a 3-2 lead, and Victor Wembanyama may have issued a code red. But we wouldn't know because he did something after the game, or didn't do something after the game, that people are calling into question. So a lot to get to. If you want to join us, the number is 713-780-3776. We mourn our hero not coming through, but he'll be back. Don't worry. At some point, it's darkest before the dawn, and Jason Alexander will prove to you that your faith was warranted. We'll talk more about the Astros and other topics when we get back. But first, I want to talk to you about giving you a chance to do something pretty fun. The World Cup is a couple weeks away now. We get ever closer, and Michelob Ultra is going to give you a chance to go see some games in person. This event or promotional event is going to run through June 14th. All you got to do is show up at one of these places and compete in an interactive soccer shootout game. The winner will go home with a pair of tickets to a Houston-based FIFA World Cup game. We got locations across the city on Friday and Saturday. Right now, I'll give you the Friday ones. A little bit later, I'll give you the Saturday ones. So for all these times are Friday from 5 to 8. You can be at Vita Moriscos in Cypress, Bombshells in Stafford, Vita Garden in Midtown, or Conejo Malo in downtown, 5 to 8 p.m. on Friday. I'll give you the Saturday ones next time. Also, bonus, the bullpen will broadcast live from Kirby Ice House in the Heights on Saturday from noon to 2 p.m. You play for your chance to witness history because Superior is worth playing for. Michelob Ultra, official sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 26.
Enjoy responsibly 2026 Anheuser-Busch Michelob Ultra Light Beer, St. Louis, Missouri.
It's only FM sports station, ESPN 97.5.
Kane is in the building there.
This is the Del Urelia Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Urelia.
So we'll talk some Texans. They made a move to reward Nico Collins for what he has been as a player and what they expect of him in the future. But let's get to Ryan first. What's up, Ryan?
Hey, what's going on, Deli Belly? What's up, Vapors? So, me, I had a little Mio in the car, and we're listening to the 7 to 10 show, and he wants to know what catching some wool means. Can you enlighten him?
You don't have a little Mio in the car, first of all. Their culture is not your costume. Also, why don't you explain it? You're a father, allegedly. You explain it to your son. If you don't know the reference, Lance, for some reason, brought that phrase out in defense of I forgot who it was. It doesn't really matter. He said what he said, and there it is. I'm not explaining that to anyone. Anyone who heard it and doesn't know what it means, you're better off. It's an old way of saying something that didn't need to be said. That's all. Unprofessional. Much like he was unprofessional. I don't know if it was as unprofessional as what Uribe thought the Cardinals were on when he gave them the DX chop three times. If you missed it, after a big strikeout in the eighth inning of the Brewers-Cardinals game, their pitcher, Uribe, Abner Uribe, right?
Yep.
He looks over to the Cardinals dugout and does three DX chops. The only
vigorous
other, DX. Vigorous. Chop. The only other athlete we've seen do that is Joel Embiid, from what I remember.
And Triple H, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Certainly great athlete. Let's not take that away from Triple H. But as far as non-wrestling athletes,
yeah.
Joel Embiid did it. And Joel Embiid, okay, you do it. It's still out of context on a basketball court, but it's more so out of context on a baseball diamond. I don't know why.
Extra bush league.
It's just extra. I don't know why. It's happening in baseball, a sport that has softened when it comes to demonstration, we know.
Yeah.
But this one was aggressive. He is, much like Jason Alexander, I have this random list of my favorite players. Uribe. Shooting up the charts. He looks over to the Cardinals dugout after the strikeout and does three, as Sean said, vigorous DX chops. And, of course, much like the Astros no-hitter yesterday, there was a review. Now, the review turned out to be...
Of the chops?
Or? No, not the chops, of the strike he threw that led to the chops. It was a strike. He got out of the inning, so he didn't have to get back on the mound and continue the pitch. He says he did it. While apologizing, did all the apologies. I apologize to the Brewers, my team, the people who run it, all blah, blah, blah. I'm sorry. But then he also added, through an interpreter, he felt that the manager of the Cardinals was being unprofessional because he was motioning that they're going to hit some of his guys. He also said what was going on in batting practice by the Cardinals he didn't like either. So that was why he did it, although he is apologetic for doing it.
I like that. I like the move of, I apologize. However, let me tell you why I did it.
Look, I have my reasons. Why. I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do this normally. It's not who I am.
No.
But their actions led to this. But yeah. I am sorry.
And I like that because he follows through on the pitch and he's facing the Brewers dugout. He
makes a turn.
Yeah, he makes the deliberate turn. It's so funny that there's a half second of like, nope, Nita.
Yeah, I'm facing the wrong way.
Yep, Nita.
I fell off the mound to the left. I need to turn to the right. So they know this is for them and them alone.
It wasn't all one fluid motion. It was like, boom, strike, turn, chop, chop, chop.
And his manager, of course, is very embarrassed because it's Murphy, their manager. Oh, Pat Murphy's like very embarrassed by it, of course. Called it unacceptable. And, you know, Uribe was like, it's wrong. But I have my reasons.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder how many guys are going to have to get hit because
today,
of this.
Yeah. For this. Well, he as I said, he told us he did it partly because the manager for the Cardinals was saying, I'm going to hit some of your guys, allegedly. So we'll see if there's a follow through there.
They're better, man.
I'm looking for anything when it comes to baseball. We're watching the Astros, but we don't really care about the National League. But if Oliver Marmol and the Cardinals want some get back, bring it. Just don't aim at the head. Let's not throw projectiles at people's heads.
Keep it
classy,
guys.
Yeah, much like a DX chop, let's keep it classy.
I think that's good for the environment of baseball. You DX chop, then just, hey, there's going
to
be...
And whatever happens after that, kind of happens.
For the DX chop to have meaning, there has to be consequences.
Like, yeah, he can't just get away with that, right? Like, now he won't pay the price.
No.
Because he's a pitcher. Which is always
a relief
a thing. Yeah, he may not be seen in the series the rest of the way. But does a Brewer pay the price the plate for what Uribe did? I guess we'll find out.
Put one on Yelich's back.
Yelich is like, I knew it was going to be me. I knew it. I knew I was going to have to pay for it. And it's a 12:40 start, so we'll find out pretty quickly. If you are just scanning what's happening in baseball, whether that leads to anything. After his unacceptable actions, according to his manager, Pat Murphy. All right, whatever. Beyond that, in baseball, we did have the Astros losing, but we also had the A's losing because the AL West is terrible. And they didn't lose any ground. The A's, as your division leader, are now a game under 500, half a game ahead of the Mariners. The Astros remain 3.5 back. So no harm, no foul, despite our heroes, let's just say, less than stellar start. All right, the Texans give Nico Collins more money. They add on to his deal, not a full contract extension, which I'm sure will come at some point, maybe after this upcoming year, but they have added more money to the final couple years of his deal, and he was being paid at a level below his contributions. Depending, you know, there are great receivers in the league, so I don't know where you have Nico falling, whether he's a top five guy for you, top eight. I don't know how you feel about him, but he wasn't getting paid, no matter how good you think he is, he wasn't getting paid to that level. So it changes. They added on $9 million in cash to the 2026 season, and he got an $8 million increase in the 2027 season. So Nico's going to make over nearly $29 million in 2026, and then he'll make... over $29 million, nearly $30 million in 2026. So he'll be fifth highest among receivers. That makes sense. He's not a $30 million guy. Not that it matters. You're barely $125,000 away from that. So chump change when it comes to NFL contracts. But the Texans told you, while it wasn't a real serious report, it was like, hey, teams checking in to see with Nico's contract maybe coming up. Could he shake loose? And Caserio was very strong, and we're not trading Nico Collins. Whoever reported it or whatever information I had, they can shove it. We're not trading Nico. So all the report was is a team was checking in, not that you would trade him.
Nah, shove it.
All right. Got it. Apologies.
Yeah. Hey, Caserio, keep that same energy. Tell that GM to shove it. All right.
Yeah. It wasn't even a GM. It was like
some underling.
Underling is insulting, but that's kind of what it was. It was an assistant to the assistant to the GM or something like that, calling your assistant to the assistant to see about the Nico Collins thing. That was reported that there was some interest in potentially acquiring Nico if the Texans weren't going to be willing to give him the money people thought he deserved. They were very much willing. No trade. Nico Collins is here for at least the next couple of years, and you imagine as long as injuries don't take a hold, he'll be here beyond that. And they made him whole, I guess you would say. They paid him like a top receiver should get paid. And he's your number one. You believe in him. They're going to pay him like that going forward. So the Texans, we know. If they believe in you, you'll get yours. What's that say about number seven? They're waiting and seeing. I think that's what that says about number seven. Unless we're surprised and a deal comes forth at some point in the offseason. But the proof is in front of you. If they know or at least believe who you are as a player and they believe you're one of the best in the league, they're more than happy to give you a contract that represents that.
Yeah. I am a little curious of like I get all the stated reasons, but it is rare that a team just is like, here's a raise. Good job.
Yeah,
we believe you should be paid in accordance.
But the Texans do it.
Yeah, I just kept waiting for the, like, and also they add an extra year that's non-guaranteed. Or, you know, I was waiting for some, like here's why the Texans did it other than.
And it's usually for a player who, whether it's he's been very vocal or it's been reported, is upset with this deal. Not with the Texans specifically, but with other teams when it happens, it's this player is not thrilled with his upcoming money or lack of guarantees.
Maybe misses an OTA.
Yeah, and the team will be like, you know what? All right, we don't want to really have a problem. We're going to throw on extra cash on top of your deal and guarantee more of the money, and that's a fix as opposed to giving the player who may be more of a short-term or an extension. You just give him more money on top of whatever he was already owed and say, hey, we good? The player will say we're good, and they keep it moving.
Yeah.
This one is the same except for we did not hear about an unhappy player. And as I said, I just thought they would just agree to an extension that kept them here beyond 2027.
Yeah.
And now I'm not suggesting that he won't be here beyond 2027. It just feels like it puts off what eventually will happen, that Nico Collins will be a long-term Texan. He's been very open about wanting to be here for the entirety of his career. So, but in the meantime, we'll pay you like a top receiver, and we'll go from there. So how old will Nico Collins be at the end of 2027? He is 27 now, so I guess he turned 27 in March, so he'll be going until what, his age 29 season at that point. So we'll see how it goes. But right now, don't worry about Nico's money. If you were concerned about that, the Texans say, "I'm not concerned. D'Amico's not concerned. You shouldn't be concerned."
Thank you, Nick.
Yes.
It's very strange. This is where, if I'm CJ Stroud, I'm like, wait, so this guy's just getting a raise? What?
Well, yeah, he has to play with you.
Exactly. What?
Yes,
come on.
Yes. He has to make up for what you are on at times. So, yes.
He's had to he was pulling double shifts.
Yeah.
And he's
the last 2 years. Like, year one, we could have been like, well, CJ's made you. No one's going to say after the last 2 years that Nico Collins is being made by CJ Stroud.
No.
So he gets his money. It's not Tua Tyreek level type stuff. But, you know, we have no idea. There was some evidence of what Tua was without Tyreek and Jalen Waddle. Well, although Jalen Waddle had a pretty productive year the 1 year Tyreek wasn't there. We don't know what CJ is like without Nico Collins, at least for an extended amount of time. And the Texans are like, we don't ever want to find out. Never want to find out what it's like if Nico Collins isn't around. So he will be around at least for a couple years, and we'll see if it goes beyond that. So there it is. Nice deal for Nico Collins. Well-deserved. All right, we'll go to break. We'll talk about what happened in the NBA Finals. Excuse me. Maybe I'm being a little disrespectful to the Knicks. I meant to say the Western Conference Finals.
Don't let Tracy Morgan hear that.
Big deal anyway. I don't want to upset Anne Hathaway or Mariska Hargitay, as I told you yesterday. I don't care what Tracy Morgan thinks about anything, honestly. I think he's got a new show that did pretty well in his first season. Whatever. Him and Ben Stiller can hang out. I don't have any concerns about their thoughts on anything Knicks related. As I told you yesterday, Ben Stiller, watch the game. Stop tweeting. It's not for us. You tweeting about the Knicks is not for us.
Put the phone down.
Yeah, anything.
Put the phone down, fucker.
I mean, hey, new Marsha Brady. You were great in that movie. Get a hold of Ben. That's all. I don't know.
Christine, get a hold of your man.
I said it yesterday. I'm standing with it. For some reason, Christine Taylor's performance in that Brady movie is across my timeline. I feel like this thing is just listening to me. I don't know why. Maybe it's because her husband's a prominent Knicks fan, so people are like, hey, no, his wife was an actress too, right?
Going through the catalog?
Yeah, I don't know. But they're like, hey, underrated performance. Christine Taylor's Marsha Brady. And just like, they're just quote tweeting that particular line with clips of her performance in that movie. And you know what? The people are right. Better than anything that's been done in the last 15 years. Just saying. Best actor in that family, Christine Taylor. There, I said it. And less annoying as a Knicks fan. She's there. She's there being supportive. But we don't see her tweeting about it, which is the way it should be. We'll go to break of that. We'll talk about the Western Conference Finals when we come back. There was a potential code red called. We'll see. Jeremy Cain has some thoughts on what Biombo and Plumlee did to him. And Victor Wembanyama didn't do a thing you're expected to do, win or lose. We'll talk about that when we come back.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
In a series that hasn't really had a compelling game since what? Game one? Has there been a compelling game since game one? There have been levels to the margin. But for the most part, the result has been kind of decided before it was real clutch time.
Yeah.
So we had another one of those.
They've been like back and forth. And then late third, early fourth.
There's a big jump, and now we kind of get what's going on here as we just figure out what the final score would be. So 127-114 the final. The Thunder up 3-2. In the series, we got a game six on Thursday in San Antonio. And Wembanyama didn't have a great night. De'Aaron Fox didn't have a great night shooting. Wemby got to the line 12 times, made all 12, but was only 4-for-15. And same could be said for Shea to a lesser degree as far as the shooting percentage. He was a little bit better, 7-19, but he did get to the line 17 times. And really, that is the point of contention. You know, the Thunder are doing things that upset people, but mostly it's because they're getting away with it. Like, if the play that Jerry McCain made when he kind of elbows Dylan Harper in the throat in the backcourt and then veers in front of him in the front court and falls down with minimal contact to draw a foul. If that is legislated correctly by the referees, we're laughing at Jerry McCain, but we're not offended as much because they didn't get away with it. Shea falling over in the backcourt with minimal contact. We had Jalen Williams running into Keldon Johnson in the front court, where Keldon Johnson just standing there, not even looking at him. Jalen Williams runs into him, then falls down. Big ass Jalen Williams falls down. Like, Keldon Johnson, a strong dude. But if Jalen Williams was asked about it honestly and said, who's the stronger man? He would say himself. And yet, he just collapsed, crumbled to the ground, foul on Keldon Johnson. The broadcast crew, Jamal Crawford and Reggie, not a foul play on. These are the things that are upsetting people. Yes, they're unethical. They may be one of the more unethical basketball teams we've seen in quite a while. They're playing in the margins, and it's not even like the Rockets playing in the margins, where it's threes and frees. James Harden's going to draw fouls. Okay, at least with James, and look at me defending James, at least most of it happened in the front court, in the lane. Yeah, sure, he'll flop around trying to draw fouls on threes. We're getting it when they're not even trying to score. We're getting it.
It's the Chris Paul flopping.
Yes, it is, and it's a team-wide thing. They will never admit to it. I don't know if we're just following the leader, and if Shea does it, we all do it. It almost feels like there's a memo that, hey, we play in the margins, accentuate contact whenever you can. Hey, they can't call a flop every time, so we're going to do it enough that the referees eventually have to start calling these guys, and by these guys I mean the opponent, for fouls. I imagine there isn't anything written down because don't leave a paper trail. But I think it's just natural. Hey, he does it, we'll do it, we'll keep doing it because we keep getting away with it. I don't think Mark Dagnall's talking. I don't think it's talking points when he writes on the board.
Yeah.
More flopping. I don't think that's how it goes. It just feels like that. And it's almost all the fault of the referees for not doing anything about it and being, what's the word? For being so gullible to allow it to happen when the entire world knows what time the Thunder are on and allowing them to do it.
Yeah, no, Tony Brothers is like the biggest mark in the game for flopping, where it's like he will call the flop. He will, like, if you flop, you will get rewarded. When Tony Brothers is on out there. I do think that there is like some, maybe not some memo, but especially when they get in the bonus, when the Spurs get in the bonus early in a quarter, like you can tell that they turn up the just fall down in the backcourt because that's free throws. You know, like just like they turn it up to
don't
where
don't even run offense if we can figure out a way to get a couple free throws without even trying. Just fall to the ground at the first sign of contact, and we'll do it. The McCain thing, forget about the elbow to Harper. Okay, incidental contact, I guess you want to call it that. But the veering into Harper's path, feeling any sort of contact, some people said twerking and falling down. Whatever, just falling down because you feel it. And knowing your only goal here is not to play basketball. It's offensive, honestly. You're not even trying to play basketball. This isn't a big moment in the game. We're not going to call you, hey, that's a smart play. You're offending our senses by doing this because it's a team-wide thing. You all do it. You know, if you win a title, you win a title. And normally, if you only win the one title, the entire world finds a way to say it wasn't real. It's happened to every title winner over the last decade if they weren't repeating. Like the Celtics, you game the system with math.
Yeah,
and you went through the playoffs where the best team's player wasn't available. Yeah. We find a way. Even the Warriors' first title, I believe, you can look at all the point guards who missed time. There's a way for us to attack every title, but when you win a second, that noise kind of tamps down. If the Thunder win, the noise is not going to tamp down. We're gonna go from thinking how legitimate the first one was to thinking the second one, which just by going through NBA history is very hard to do to win a second consecutive one, is less legitimate than the first because no one believes this team is playing in a way that's ethical, unless you're a fan of the Thunder.
Yeah, and if they get through this series, they will do so. They'll be flopping in Madison Square Garden with like the most eyeball, the most scrutiny on them.
Yeah, it's gonna like Brunson, known flopper, but he isn't even
flopper.
Yeah, he's not at the level.
No,
he's a people's flopper at this point. If it's the Spurs versus the Thunder, he'll be. Excuse me, the Knicks versus the Thunder. Yeah. He'll be the people's flopper. Like we're fine. Like if Shea can do it.
Yeah.
We hope Brunson gets away with anything he gets away with. And he is not at the level of the entire team. I think one guy like the Rockets had James. Mm-hmm. You can't think of another Rocket and go, that guy's a flopper.
Yeah. Well, Chris Paul.
Chris Paul, yes. But he was a Rocket, but yeah. We had known before what he was on. You don't think of Peter Tucker, Trevor Ariza, Eric Gordon, none of them. You don't put them in that category. Yeah. It was James. You've got an entire franchise full of them. Jeremy Cain's been there less than like 5 months, less than that, maybe 3 months at this point with the playoffs. He's a Duke guy, so it plays. It tracks.
It's easy for the Duke guy. It's a system fit
for
the Duke guys.
It tracks. They're likely going to win another title. And you know what? They're a great basketball team who doesn't need what they do. I guess. I assume, because I don't know what they're like when they don't do it.
Against the Spurs, I kind of feel like they need
it. Yeah, against the Spurs, I think they do.
Because their offense, especially
A.J. Mitchell and Jalen Williams.
Yeah, like their offense is liable to just get completely bogged down. And that's why, you know, Shea shooting 10 first half free throws was like huge for them. And shooting... What was it, 17 in the game? Like, that's just like...
And the frustration level. You can't even account for the frustration of the other team.
A young team.
The Spurs may not just be ready to handle all the tricks that the Thunder, a young team themselves, although they do have some veterans, Shea and Caruso and Hardenstein, among the group, are doing. Like, you see the frustration on the Spurs' faces. You know, it's the cynical laugh when it happens, or I can't believe you called that.
Yeah.
And I imagine it's getting to them. Look, the Spurs got to the line 32 times, so they spent plenty of time at the free throw line. The Thunder did 38. They got to the line 38 times, highlighted by Shea, 16-17. And it was just a game where they controlled it. As we talked about, the runs happened, but when it came down to it, they were never really threatened. And now they're one game away from getting back to the finals. And somehow, some way, the Small City Thunder are going to be a team that forces most of the country to root for the Knicks. That is something remarkable that they were able to accomplish.
I'll be interesting. It'll be interesting if that actually,
you know,
if that's what happens.
I guess the question will be: can the country separate? Like I'm struggling, separate the actual Knicks from their supporters and their regular supporters, not me. Getting after Ben Stiller for whatever reason. Well, I don't know why that's my thing, but I'm getting after Ben Stiller. But
the bing bong.
The bing bong. We're outside the garden. We're talking. We have that 12-year-old calling Donovan Mitchell a PAB. That stuff, like full-throated on the microphone, Donovan Mitchell's a PAB. And not the punk version, the other version. I can't repeat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how the rest of the country will deal with
harassing Brian Windhorst
last year. Yeah, these are things that.
Oh, I mean, Stephen A. is gonna. I mean,
well, he's gonna. Is he gonna? He's gonna turn people off.
I think that's what's gonna happen. Stephen A. will turn people off. Whoever they have on, like the pregame show when they're there, they'll have whatever Fat Joe or whoever.
Get Anne Hathaway in front of a camera.
Well, that'll
I think
get
he'll
people
be fine.
On the Knicks side.
Yeah, Hargate, the Q rating for those two. Impeccable. I think those two.
Stabler there too.
Why not?
I feel like Stabler should get.
I don't know if he's a Knicks fan, but sure. You get those two in the building: Hargate, Olivia Benson, and Anne Hathaway. Knicks fans will be looked at in a very different way. But if it's going to be if Stephen A. Smith's going to show up in the building on the pregame, not just the pregame, but talking to the guys, calling the game, sitting court, talking to guys courtside before the game, all the things that happen as far as presentation for the finals. It's going to be tough for people to go, you know what, Jalen Brunson, not so bad. Because the shadow of Stephen A. Smith and others will be hanging over that Knicks team, who's, for the most part, pretty likable. Like, there was a, Keith, we'll get to you when we come back. Hold on, we're about to go to break. There was a moment after they clinched the series, and they're in the presser, and some guy, I'm sure it's a guy who's been covering the team, walks in, and you hear Brunson go, hey, talk. He just says to Hart, because he knows him, hey, don't mention it. I see it, but don't talk about it. Hart won't follow those that advice. He goes, oh, you're just going to walk in here licking your fingers, huh? You're supposed to in here asking questions. You went to get some chicken. And the guy's like, actually, I do have a question. Nope. Nope. You're not asking a question that chicken hitting, though, right? See? And then you have the Josh Hart. Remember when they won the in-season tournament? He put his thumb in a place. Jalen Brunson didn't want his thumb.
Yeah, yeah.
And then after the conference finals, when Lisa Salters calls Jalen Brunson over, and Brunson's like, you get out of here. You're not doing that again. So they're kind of likable, except you got the Ben Sellers of the world and others ruining it for all, the rest of us. Keith, we'll get to you when we come back. Anyone else want to join them? The number is 713-780-3776. A world where the Knicks more likable than their opponent. That's the greatest accomplishment the Thunder have ever done. Forget
small
about
town, heartland.
All built versus bought. All the things that a small town can lean into. And yet, you've made yourself more unlikable than maybe any other NBA team going right now. It's a real accomplishment for them. Credit to Shea. Credit to Dagnall. Credit to all the guys involved. That should be put up as a banner. Forget about your second potential second consecutive title.
Became villainous.
Became villainous somehow, some way. We overcame the odds and became villainous. A real credit to the Thunder. We'll get to Keith and anyone else in a second hour when we get back. ESPN.